Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I'm your host, Patrick Daugherty, here with John Daigle, Kyle Dvorak, Patrick Crane, where we will be previewing Thursday night football and some of Week 10's biggest games on this first of our two preview shows. That includes the Falcons at the Cowboys and the Titans hosting the Saints. We'll also be graced with a Crane Stat of the Week, which he's kind of turning into Stats of the Week. I was promised two Stats of the Week, I believe for the second straight week.
Well, they're not necessarily supposed to be the stat of the week. I thought I was helping you out if I say, hey, like, you know, when you're throwing stuff around, I got some good stuff on Goddard. You might want to.
These are stunning numbers that turn the entire
season. They don't have to be branded.
Yeah, no, they're branded. And they're sponsored by Burt's Bees, the chapstick I just applied before this podcast. So, Burt's, thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for sponsoring Crane's Stats of the Week. Now we're going to dive into every fantasy-relevant player. I thought about skipping the pre-show banter, but just real quick, do you guys have any pre-internet memories? Denny and I talked about that this week, and his pre-internet memory was Blockbuster. You know, Denny's 49 years old, so he remembers a little more than we do. But I just, when I say pre-internet, what do you guys think of, Daigle?
Mixtapes, recording off the radio onto cassettes.
I did that.
So I could save the songs, because like radio stations probably do now. Now I only listen to sports talk radio, which is also the seventh circle of hell. You used to be able to catch one particular song, your favorite song, at the top of every hour. It would not space it apart. And so you would know when to tune in. And Kyle's just looking at me like, what the hell are these boomers talking about? So you would know when to tune in and hit record on the cassette player and record that song. And then that was like building your own cassette. It was pretty awesome.
Well, and sometimes it wasn't even like top of the hour stuff. You would just sit and wait, like, when are they going to play Wood? ? By Alice in Chains, folks. Yeah. We got to get that on the tape. Kyle has no idea what Alice
in Chains is. I have a brother 14 years older than me, and so he made me a tape of all these various songs that were kind of popular at the time, including a lot of grunge music. So I remember listening. I was like, you know, this like super fifth grader who's like really into Soundgarden and everything.
he made you a paperweight is what you're saying.
No, I listened to it a lot.
I don't know if I have pre-internet memories.
You honestly, there's no way you could. You're just like not even like making an ageist joke. You just actually are too.
Yeah, and the things that would be pre-internet memories for me would just be a time when I wasn't allowed on the internet. I was too young to see the complete dangers of the internet. Not that I didn't like have access to it. I was just gated away from it. So I don't like. And my version of the cassette stuff was using shady internet websites to download music. Given that it's past the statute of limitations now.
Music. Because I would,
and like I think the Gen X think vinyl is cool. That seems like something
every generation.
Yeah,
I think that's just everyone has come around to that. I do have a vinyl player, but it was so I can play my parents' old vinyls. I have a bunch of old. You guys might recognize them from like the 50s and 60s.
And vinyl,
I had to have a tough conversation with my dad. He's insistent that CDs are going to come back like vinyl.
Oh,
is
no.
Now.
There's no.
That's not happening.
The whole point of vinyl is that it sounds clean.
Yeah. They don't sound clean. They sound warm. People like the warmth. They sound warm.
They sound vintage. Yes, they sound better. CDs like, there's no way. You'd have to get a CD player too.
I think Crane's dad is right, because the vinyl thing is just about people wanting to have something physical the CDs is just about wanting to have something physical. So they're not practical anymore, of course. I may or may not collect CDs. That's the end of the show for today, folks. Yeah.
If you gave me, like, Pat, if you sent a DVD to me, I would not know how to play it or what to do with it anymore.
I like to collect things. It's like a way to show off to you. I even still buy a few movies every once in a while. It's not practical at all.
This is insanity. That is,
like, you buy them on. Collection? What do you mean?
What?
You buy them on, like, Blu-ray?
Like the Criterion Collection or something. There's, like, special collections of these things. And I just feel like it's sad to have, like, why should everything just exist in the ether? You know,
Pat, you vaguely sound like a hoarder. This sounds like you might need an intervention.
This is everyone will have a collection of some sort. Mine are just kind of anachronisms now. Everyone collects something.
The CD collection is in the other room with the 70 stacks of newspapers. Don't worry.
I still get some magazines. I'm looking at my CDs right now. There are hundreds of them.
Magazines?
I get The Economist, folks. I get The New Yorker. I get Rolling Stone.
We're actually doing this live stream over Carrier Pigeon.
Is it 1998 where you are?
Do I really want to be staring at a screen all day? I mean, I stare at a screen 17 hours a day. I need to just read a magazine for 2 minutes a day. Anyways, we're getting on to the magazine of games. This week's Thursday Night Football, where the Dolphins are reportedly preparing for Jacoby Brissett to start against the Ravens as Tua Tagovailoa struggles to grip the football with his finger injury. This one could come down to the wire, but we don't know. It might be a game time decision with Tua. But right now, PointsBet has the Ravens getting 7.5 points as heavy road favorites. Kyle, I was originally going to ask if Tua was streamable, but I guess the question now is, is there any Dolphin we can trust outside of Jalen Waddle and Mike Gesicki against what is a really big pass funnel defense from the Ravens?
There are not Dolphins pass catchers, but Miles Gaskin is coming alive now, especially with Malcolm Brown out. He looks to have not a complete dominant share of the backfield carries over Salvin Ahmed, but it seems to be a clear 1-2, and they're not doing the thing where they mix up their leading carrier every week. But pass catchers, no, that's it. Those are the two guys, and even then, the ceiling is slightly capped, although the Ravens defense is just so much worse than they've been in recent years. Like, one of the lower teams in yards per play, passing yards per game allowed. So, I mean, I'm not saying you should play Jacoby Brissett, but at least by extension, the players who we were already targeting at a minimum have a beatable matchup despite their poor quarterback play. But outside of those two, no, you've pretty much summed up the passing attack.
Like, who is the Dolphins' number two receiver? Mac Hollins?
I think it's Mac Hollins. He saw like six targets last week, but I cannot come in here and say that means anything.
Preston Williams was
the number two wide receiver.
Yeah,
Preston Williams was injured too. So when he is available again, I would imagine that's him. Otherwise, it has been a combination of Albert Wilson to a lesser extent of Mac Hollins. But I do think it's a slightly concerning matchup for Tua. The volume will be there since the Dolphins are still passing at the third highest rate from neutral game script and fifth highest when trailing, which is what we expect them to do in this game against the Ravens. But Tua has struggled, as we know, under pressure, completing 49% of his passes with four picks, zero touchdowns under duress this year. And more importantly, just 3.7 yards per attempt against the blitz. And we know that's what Wink Martindale brings at the fifth highest rate in the league this year. So I am slightly concerned that this is more of a voluminous game, but not a really efficient one for fantasy for Tua.
As Nagel's describing it, it's a Jacoby Brissett game. This was, they would have just been using him anyways.
Right.
Well, even Brissett's not great against prep. I mean, Brissett is like one of the more famously slow, like methodical quarterbacks in the entire league. And that is not going to play well against Wink Martindale either. What we're really saying is that even though the Ravens bleed passing yards, we don't have much faith in Tua or Brissett to have like a streamable night, do we?
Brissett has a lot of Byron Leftwich in him.
I like that. I see that.
So he's a future world champion offensive coordinator. That's going to be great. That's going to be really cool. Behind the pass catchers, we got Miles Gaskin, who had the plotter special in week 9, 20 carries for 34 yards. Over his past two games, he has 32 carries for 68 yards, Miles Gaskin. Like, who is that old guy we used to always make fun of Titans? Frank Gore is blushing at 32 carries for 68 yards. Let's just put it. Is Miles Gaskin an RB2 or the number?
Eddie George?
I think of Matt Asiata, but that was the Vikings. The Titans had an Asiata special for a while, but I can't place the guy's name. But is anyone billing Miles Gaskin as an RB2 this week?
Kyle already explained it, that they're not going anywhere else. There are only 13 other backfield touches behind him the past two games without Malcolm Brown. And that's while Gaskin has been a touch-based RB2 in that span, averaging 16 carries and five targets per game. So it was frustrating in DFS that he got there with a touchdown when he was a bad play last week, knowing he was going to get the touches, but also that the Dolphins weren't going to be in a position to run the ball at all. But he is still continuing to be a touch base, like I said, RB2. You've already done your rankings, Pat, so I'm sure you've seen the list. It's always about the landscape this year, since no fantasy player except Cooper Kupp is good. And Gaskin just fits in there seamlessly because he's just going to be used. It's that simple.
It is that simple, and that's why I do have him ranked in the top 24. And the Titan I was thinking of, by the way, was Jackie Battle. Zoomers will truly not remember Jackie Battle.
Very athletic Jackie Battle.
Yeah. Doesn't ring any bells, to be honest.
Former Chief Crate, yep.
Yeah, he's now 62 years old. Even though he was playing as recently as 2014, he's 62 years old, Jackie Battle. So we hope you're doing well in retirement, Jackie. I think there's more to talk about here.
He loves magazines.
Yeah, he loves magazines. We're in the same club together. More to talk about with these Ravens. And Rashad Bateman was ninth in week 9 in air yards amongst receivers with 111. But he turned those into just 52 actual yards, Karain. Was that something to build on versus his awful Dolphins defense? And what's the interplay right now between Rashad Bateman and Marquise Brown? I heard you may or may not have a stat on Marquise Brown.
I do. I'm very bullish on both these guys, you know, because we're seeing a Ravens offense that's balanced. They don't really have an option to go run heavy. We'll talk about Devonta Freeman in a bit. But, you know, when that's the running game, you're going to want to pass more, and they have been passing more. What we wanted to see from Bateman was that his routes were going to go up. That's what we wanted last week, and we saw it. He was at 81% route run rate last week. He was in the 60s prior to that in his two games. So that's a big increase. We can call him a full-time player at this point. We'd love to see him up 85, 90%, even above that. But this is still like a solid base where he can actually have a breakout, you know, with this level of routes. He was targeted on 19% of his routes last week with a 13.5 ADOT. That's awesome. Like, you know, it's not like elite, but it feels very much like a breakout can be supported with that type of usage. Low yards per target last week, but that is not something I'm worried about. And also, he has an 8.5 yards per target on the season. So it's not like it's a chronic thing where you're seeing, like, you know, Elijah Moore for weeks and weeks and weeks just had the worst yards per target. We know it's a functional passing game. He looks like he's going to have really solid volume and his routes are increasing, kind of breakout imminent, wheels up type of situation. On the Brown thing, he is also, I think, underrated in terms of his actual opportunity in this offense, because the Ravens have been in this weird situation, and it feels like they're always like this, where they're just, you know, they're blowing teams out or they're getting blown out. So they've had reduced routes for guys. You know, you think about the Lions game, they pull guys. You think about the Bengals game a couple weeks ago. So if you look at Whopper, which is Josh Hermsmeyer's stat, weighted opportunity rating that combines target share and air yard share, then Brown is wide receiver 15 in that opportunity metric, which is a per game metric. But if you look at weighted targets per route run, which is a stat that Ben Gretsch has popularized, which factors in air yards into the targets per route run calculation, he's wide receiver 8 there. And this is very relevant because if you exclude the Bengals game, over the last 4 weeks, he's run a route on 94% of dropbacks or more in every game, you know, three of those games minus the Bengals game. So His role in this offense is actually understated by things like Whopper, by things like target share. If the Dolphins can push the Ravens here, then I think Brown could have a really big game. And I think Bateman could also be a really strong play.
That feels optimistic, the Dolphins under Jacoby Brissett pushing the Ravens. I assume you're throwing out that Bengals game because they probably didn't play their guys towards the like fourth quarter or something, right?
Yeah, they were getting blown out so bad.
Yeah, yeah, that game was ugly.
And Sammy Watkins returns just in time to screw all those stats up.
That was my concern with all this, is that Sammy Watkins, as the Chief showed us, is a guy coaches love to play, despite, you know, fantasy managers would tell you, I didn't even know he was playing.
I think he's going to be kind of like a cardio guy. I think he's going to be like the decisive number three. And he's great at cardio. I mean, he's still great straight line speed.
Nick Boyle could return this game as well, but that could push them into more two wide receiver sets. And if Sammy Watkins gets to run those sweet, sweet cardio reps on two wide, that could push Bateman out of like only into three wide sets.
And I don't worry about Watkins usurping Bateman. I worry about how much he's actually going to cannibalize. We know that Watkins averaged or saw at least 7 targets in every full game he played prior to injury, all of course without Bateman. And now with Bateman having a 19% target share in his 3 games without Watkins, I'm just curious what Watkins chips away at here, which is why I think Bateman is closer to a wide receiver, low end wide receiver 3-4 in this game, while we like observe the landscape and see what happens now.
That's like a rational way to approach this. I don't want to be rational. I want to say that, you know, the routes I don't think are a major concern. I'm not worried about, like, partly because they don't really have a realistic path of being efficient through the ground game. And they know that this is a smart organization. I'm not that worried about the 2 tight end set shift. I mean, we saw a ton of Devin Duvernay over the past few weeks. We've seen some James Prochet. There are routes that Sammy Watkins can get in here. That does not need to have Bateman come off the field. The key question is targets. Do the targets stick with Rashad Bateman with Sammy Watkins back on the field? I think it's very prudent of Daigle to say, yeah, maybe. Let's wait and see.
We don't like prudency.
I don't like prudent.
And yeah, and like I was gonna say with Boyle, I mean, his job is usually to be paving lanes, you know, for like J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards. They're not gonna be prioritizing paving lanes for Devontae Freeman. And I just want to ask you guys, like, you know, the game's Thursday night. You can't wait on Devontae Freeman. Is Devontae Freeman worth like an early week flex spot? Or is it something you hold out just trying to find a better option between now and Sunday? Or do you think Devontae Freeman is locked into enough work that, yeah, there's no shame in getting him out there as a Thursday night flex for your weekend lineup?
He's not even a flex. He's an RB2. We know teams make major changes out of the bye. That's what we look for. That's what in DFS after buys, we take chances because we assume some things will happen because it's the only time, that 14-day break, for them to implement new strategies. And what the Ravens did, for better or worse, is just eliminate Tyson Williams. They made him active but didn't give him a single touch, whereas Freeman handled a season high 58% of their backfield touches, 15 ahead of Le'Veon Bell's 11 in a 2-man committee. More importantly, though, Freeman ran 32 routes to Bell's 5 as the pass catcher as well, saw all 3 running back targets in that game. And so we project for heavily positive game script in this one. So I think Freeman is an awesome play.
Yeah, you say they're not paving lanes for, I believe, 5.7 yard per carry, top 15 graded runner by Pro Football Focus, Devonta Freeman. I don't know. No, I mean, there's like, it's mostly in jest. He's playing well with the opportunity.
Shut down the site.
He's, you know, he's playing well with the opportunity he's given, but there was a reason he is their 5th choice at running back, if I count, like literally.
Thereabouts.
I
mean,
if I count those numbers right, and if I am miscounting, it's probably because I'm like too high on him. There's a reason he was that far down the depth chart, and I don't even believe on the team at the start of the year. So I'm not, you know, enthralled with him. But as Daigle said, not only positive game script, but also the routes. And even on top of, like, we see Baltimore tend to not use their running backs as pass catchers, has 8 receptions over the past, I believe, 4 weeks. That's not nothing. So I agree. It's not even that you're like kind of worried about him as a flex. You're kind of shamefully, I still think there is shame to doing it, but playing him as an RB2.
There is. There's shame. Just like, but there's shame in that, no shame in collecting CDs.
We can readjust if Latavius Murray and when he comes back next week, but this week for sure it's Devonta Freeman.
Yeah, just an update on Murray. He didn't practice Monday or Tuesday, I believe. That's not really a good sign for a guy who also has been practicing for a few weeks.
We head next to Dallas, where PointsBet has the Cowboys catching 9 points as home favorites versus the Falcons. It's actually the Falcons coming off a stirring victory against the Saints. And the Cowboys reeling from a dismal loss to the Broncos. And so, Daigle, I'll just start with this very simple question. What happened to the Cowboys last Sunday?
Well, every team is allowed one of these in the NFL. It's just a matter of making sure they don't stack up. But the devil is in the details. Dak Prescott was blitzed at a top 5 rate coming into this game. And it never really made much sense defenses were attacking him like that, since he does actually lead the league with 13 touchdowns against the blitz. He's obviously a high IQ passer. But the Broncos called cover 1 man coverage on 43% of their snaps, getting pressure with only 4 players, which explains why the Cowboys through 3.5 quarters ran 37 plays for only 145 yards, under 4 yards per play, and just 5 first downs, going 1 of 13 on 3rd and 4th down situations. So it was just a different defense that the Cowboys were not used to seeing at all. And of course that happened without Tyron Smith. So if we get Tyron Smith back, and thus the Falcons, who are still averaging a league low in pressure rate, then I would imagine it gets much easier for Dak and the passing offense as a whole, especially in a game we will likely get Michael Gallup back. And thus you have another answer to respond to man coverage if teams continue doing that against the Cowboys.
So Gallup coming back is like, that's like the big news storyline for the Cowboys this week. And Crane, I'll just throw to you on this one. He hasn't played since week one, Michael Gallup. What does his return do a receiver core where we haven't been really getting stable fantasy lines from anyone other than Dalton Schultz, basically? CeeDee Lamb's had a lot of spiked weeks, but he's had some surprisingly low floor weeks. Amari Cooper's had like a okay floor, but very, very few ceiling efforts. How does introducing another very good receiver into this mix affect those guys?
Yeah, and to the point on Dak, I think he should have a bounce back week here, but my concern is the passing volume, putting aside Michael Gallup. Like heading into this week, the Falcons can be run on. They're weak against the run. They rank 23rd in EPA allowed per rush. They're 20th in run defense grade. Teams have had a strong preference attacking them on the ground. They've shifted 3% to the run against the Falcons, so they're a bit of a run funnel. Dallas is already a run-heavy team. They're 2% pass rate over expected if you include that week one game. But since then, they have a minus 2% pass rate over expected. They've been a run-heavy team after Michael Gallup went out. So adding him back in this context is not great. I mean, we thought, you know, in week one, like, man, this team might be able to support three wide receivers and a tight end. But they really haven't been that team at all since. They've been a run-heavy team, and this could be a run-heavy game plan because of the opponent. So I think it adds risk to CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper. Both those guys have been pretty close in terms of, you know, their per route opportunity, slight lean to Lamb, but, you know, they've been pretty solid. I think Gallup is going to be the riskiest of them. I mean, we saw last year he kind of got slotted into a very specific role, and so he ended up being kind of like a deep threat, touchdown or bust type of play. So I would say maybe a little bit like how Tyler Boyd is the kind of the clear third option in Cincinnati and the other two guys, you know, can kind of cannibalize each other. It's a bit like that, but the Bengals are trending up in the pass or had for several weeks before last week. The Cowboys are trending in the opposite direction, and this might be a situation where it actually makes sense for them to be run heavy.
No matter the outcome, though, we should continue having confidence in Dalton Schultz without Blake Jarwin for the next couple of games and readjust from there. We saw Dalton Schultz play a season high 95% of snaps, and he accounted for 42 of the team's 45 tight end routes. They're just not playing, as you would expect, Sean McKean or Jeremy Sprinkle at all behind him. So even with Gallup back, I still have confidence in Schultz as a middle-of-the-road, low-end tight end one.
Kyle, is there any upside at all to playing Michael Gallup in DFS and his return? Or is this like just a classic? You got to see how this actually develops. See if like any sort of profitable fantasy role develops for Michael Gallup.
I think you can at least try and go to him. I wouldn't be dying to do it, but I mean, there's always upside in the idea that if everyone is going to be, you know, deathly afraid of, well, we need to wait and see. Like the wait and see is exactly where we make money.
That's a good point.
People are, you know, they're not willing to embrace risk.
I wait and see. That's why, you know, my bankroll in DFS, you know, it's just like, I can't even, you know, fit it on the screen. There's so many zeros. That's how much money I make from waiting and seeing, you know. Sorry, horrible joke.
You wait and CD.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. All right. Well, I'm going to head out, guys. This has been a fun show. No, I mean, that would be the reason you would play him is simply for high implied team. Oh, my God. 32 implied team total, which is absolutely nuts. That would have been the highest on the slate last week. And I think the week before that as well is absolutely insane. So it's a good game environment, at least a high scoring game environment. Although, as Karain said, the volume is a little questionable. You're playing him because you like to embrace risks, not because there's any sort of certainty to him.
You talk about the game environment. Yeah, 54.5 over under right now via our friends at PointsBet. Matthew Ice, Matt Ryan, as you may know him. He's the QB11 by average points over the past 5 weeks. He has multiple touchdowns in every start but one since week one, 300 yards in three of his past four games. Is Matty Ice a top 12 quarterback this week?
I think all of us are hesitant to really be excited about
him. No one wants to say anything. No one wants that one.
My concern is that they might be able to get to him. The Saints don't have much of a pass rush. They ranked 30th in pass rush grade by PFF entering week nine. Dallas is weaker than the Saints in the secondary. They're not terrible, but they rank fourth in EPA allowed per dropback, and they have a stronger pass rush than the Saints. They have a 10th graded pass rush. So some of his weaker games, Ryan has been against strong pass rushes. And when he can just sit back, he's been much better. So I'm concerned about volume on the other side. If the Cowboys go really run heavy, that's going to, you know, slow down this game. And then I'm worried about the pass rush getting to Ryan. So this is kind of a game environment overall that I'm a little bit concerned about.
Yeah, QB1 seems aggressive for a guy who doesn't run a lot. He's not really high yards per attempt right now. He's more just a completion guy at this point, which makes sense when he hasn't played many games with Calvin Ridley. And, you know, Kyle Pitts has kind of been up and down in terms of his production. When Russell Gage is forced to become a part of your game plan, really, at that point, you kind of expect to just be low yardage, high completion, grind out slow, ugly losses. That's kind of been their MO. They're just not nearly as enticing, I think, without Calvin Ridley. QB1 seems aggressive. I think he is streamable, but he is, you know, he's streamable in the way that any pocket passer in a game with a high total is streamable, but not desirable.
It seems not desirable, but I've got him as the QB16 right now, full disclosure. So I don't have him in the top 12.
Totally fine.
But then it's like, here's beginning at QB11. Here's the lay of the land right now. Carson Wentz, Derek Carr, Ryan Tannehill, Kirk Cousins, Teddy Bridgewater, Matt Ryan. It's not an overly inspiring group.
So I think Teddy Bridgewater is the only one I'd maybe put.
Yep, that was,
I Teddy Bridgewater's never had a ceiling game his entire life, Pat. All right.
That's what I'm saying. Well, that's why I'd put Ryan ahead.
Yeah, I put Ryan ahead of Bridgewater as well. The rest
I think all of us. I think all of us only stopped at Bridgewater, though. I saw everyone in the stream nod like, yep, those guys all make sense ahead of him. So it was just Bridgewater. I think you have him within like a spot of the right position, which is not QB1.
For the record, the yell was a joke, but I did think that he was saying he would play Teddy over Matt Ryan. And
no.
I was like, well, I actually do have Teddy ranked one spot ahead of Matt Ryan, so I'm yelling at myself.
You are yelling at yourself. Are you confused by the Pats as to like
yeah,
who
I am.
You
I'm are? Very, yes.
Versus
yes,
who I am?
Just so, so, so confusing.
And I know people want to chase the options without Calvin Ridley as well, but we've seen the past two games that Tajay Sharpe and Russell Gage have actually mirrored each other in routes run, the exact number, but they've had whack-a-mole performances. Sharpe was the one who produced 2 weeks ago. Gage was the one who produced this week. And amid all of that, it was still Zacchaeus who got there with two touchdowns on just three targets behind Russell Gage this past week. So I genuinely just think you're on your own. Like, chase if you want, but you're on your own.
Real quick with Kyle Pitts, he saw a lot of stuff on Gilmore 2 weeks ago. He saw a lot of Marshawn Lattimore last week. Are we worried about the Cowboys throwing anyone at him? It would probably be good for him if Trayvon Diggs shadowed him, right? Mm-hmm. And Trayvon's good, but he seems like a guy who can get beat by Kyle Pitts more than once in a game, probably.
It's hard to talk about Trayvon because he has so many good highlight plays, but like he legitimately gives up big plays all the time. Like, yeah. I don't want to, like, he is having an incredible moments behind a myriad of letting offensive players get behind him and giving up big plays. Maybe that's a perfectly fine way to play defense if you can actually reliably pick up interceptions as often as he does. But he's not a matchup concern for any receiver that I really would.
Let's just say the guy has studied a lot of Marcus Peters film. Let's just say that.
I can see that.
And the good news is we're not going to waste the defensive player of the year award on him. It seems like it's jumped out to Miles Garrett or TJ Watt right now.
Yeah.
Harold Landry.
The Diggs talk has faded. The Diggs talk has faded.
It was fun while it lasted, though.
I guess. We head next to Tennessee, where the surging Titans host the confusing Saints as modest 3-point home favorites. The Titans' week 9 beatdown of the Rams was probably the most surprising result of the entire season so far. I guess non-Bills Jaguars division, especially since the Titans got so little out of their post Derrick Henry backfield. The Saints have some backfield concerns of their own, Pat, but what should we make of this Titans backfield after one game without Derrick Henry, where it was basically just totally inconclusive with, you know, Adrian Peterson's out there expected, Jeremy McNichols is out there expected, Deontay Foreman probably more than expected. What are the trends, if any, did we identify in this Titans backfield, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to – we're going to have to do some guesswork this week because it's Adrian Peterson's first game with the team. It's Deontay Foreman's first game back with the team. Deontay Foreman was there last year. They're very familiar with him. He's familiar with them. I believe he was in Atlanta for the preseason, but, I mean, he knows the system. So for him to come in and have 21% of the snaps, I don't know that that actually means that much. I'm a little intrigued by Foreman. I always kind of have been. So I would like for him to be involved going forward. But my guess is that he's sort of a fill-in for snaps that are going to go to Adrian Peterson because, you know, they're just kind of working Peterson in. Jeremy McNichols had 45% of the snaps. That might be a little bit of a better bet to, you know, have him kind of stick around in that, like, for like a 60-40 split with Peterson once he's fully ramped up. Peterson had 33% of the snaps. So I would anticipate that Peterson gets up probably this week to like 45-55% of snaps, and that comes mostly at the expense of Foreman and somewhat at the expense of McNichols. But we don't really have much, you know, concrete to go off here. We have to make good guesses.
Don't have much, and I don't think our prognostication has changed at all from the first game. Jeremy Nichols, the pass catcher, Adrian Peterson leading the team in carries and goal line opportunities, and then Foreman sprinkling in behind him. For this game, though, it is interesting because we know New Orleans is not allowed over 72 rushing yards to any running back all year. And so it's a tough matchup for all outside of McNichols if we expect them to play more pass catching opportunities, to pass more in general, because we did see this past week in their first game without Derrick Henry, the Titans did throw the ball on 51% of their plays with a lead, whereas in the first eight games, that was at 45%. So a small alteration, but a significant one actually for a team who just used to run the ball both from neutral game script and whenever they were leading teams.
Who do you feel most comfortable starting, if any? Is it still Adrian Peterson and just praying he does what he did at the end of week 9 and fall forward for a 1 or 2 yard touchdown?
Yeah, that'd be my pick. I like how Karain laid it out as well, that Foreman knows the system and earned a fifth of the snaps. And Adrian Peterson was coming off, I think, like 3 days of practice, maybe four with the team generously. You expect that given Foreman's repertoire with the team, he'd be the guy they would go to early while Peterson is starting to learn his new team. And as we get 1, 2, 3 weeks into the Adrian Peterson era of this offense, I really struggle to see Foreman picking up more than like a carry or two within, 2 weeks from now.
Right.
The chat does note that he looks good, and I think he looks good too. But
gotta go with
our head, not our heart here, guys.
Yeah. You made fun of me bringing up Andy Isabella as like that classic dynasty stash, but Foreman comes up, you're like, whoa, guys, let's turn the light on for Deonta Foreman.
Yeah, Foreman's been good when he's been given a chance. That's why
Andy Isabella had a long catch at one time.
You say 48 hours of practice, but yeah, remember Peterson was called up and promoted 24 hours before Foreman and then out-touched him and out-snapped him on that 48 hours of practice. So like you said, Kyle, yeah, we would expect Peterson's role to grow.
Daigle, there are whispers that Alvin Kamara is battling an ankle injury. We're going to have an official injury report by the time people actually hear this podcast, but the Saints are working out running backs on Monday. The word around town is Alvin Kamara is banged up, probably with the ankle. How do we approach the Saints backfield? Say if he's out there, Alvin Kamara, are we worried about a smaller workload? But the workload's already going down a little bit with Mark Ingram, which is to be expected. He now has an actual running back behind him on the depth chart instead of like a blank space. But just what are your initial Alvin Kamara thoughts for week 10? Where unfortunately, we need more information before we can like really get into like if we're starting Alvin Kamara or not. But just what are your initial thoughts on Kamara on the Saints backfield?
Well, we know Ingram is still a good play no matter what. And he's actually forced this most recent game, Alvin Kamara to handle a season low 55% of the team's backfield touches. Ingram himself has now averaged 11 touches in his past two games under Sean Payton since reuniting with the Saints, finishing as the RB43 and RB25 in those two contests. And the waiver wire column, I ranked Ingram as the best long-term pickup in a week where Dearness Johnson, Devonta Freeman, Jordan Howard, Carlos Hyde, Brandon Bolden were all available, for example. But he becomes a top 10 option. Like, he's a standalone RB3, Ingram is, with top 10 upside, because he is just someone who steps right in and is a starter immediately, a work-based starter, if Kamara's out. So that's why I love just having Ingram on your roster and think he's a fine start no matter what.
Quarterbacks, there's almost as many questions as the running backs for these teams, where it was very inconclusive first Ryan Tannehill start without Derrick Henry. Only 143 yards passing, only averaged 5.3 yards per attempt. Just didn't really have to do much as Matthew Stafford sabotaged the Rams inside their own 20-yard line twice, made it an easy game for the Titans. Do we think Tannehill is a streamer versus this unfriendly Saints pass defense? Or Karain, I see you nodding your head. So give us the Tannehill take, because I feel like I don't know what to think. I feel like we still have no idea how Tannehill is really going to hold up without this really robust running game.
I'm excited. They ranked fourth in play action rate in week 9, which to me is like the big thing about losing Henry for the passing game. Because Henry obviously helps the offense. He's an incredible running back. But like play action specifically doesn't actually need Henry. It just needs the play action plays to be run. Like play action's effective whether or not the running game's effective. So the fact that they were running play action at such a high rate post-Henry is a really bullish sign because Tannehill's awesome on play action, and he ranks fifth in EPA this season, EPA per play, and he ranks 13th in completion percentage over expected. He's been accurate. He's been highly efficient. If there's a little bit more volume, to the point that Daigle made at the top of this game, which, you know, it looks like there's going to be more passing volume, then I'm very excited about Tannehill. I'm excited about A.J. Brown. I think this is going to be what we had hoped. Now, the Rams gave the game away, you know, so they didn't need to throw. But I think this will probably be a bit more of a back and forth affair. And that makes me pretty interested in Tannehill.
And we've seen that the Saints defense isn't unbeatable. They returned from full health from their bye in week 6. And since that time, like just the past 2 weeks, for example, they've allowed over 70% of their passes against them completed to Matt Ryan and Tom Brady. So I don't think it's a rough spot for Tannehill at all, especially since these are the Tennessee Kingslayers who are on a 5-game winning streak that includes Chiefs, Bills, Colts, and Rams.
Quick update to Alvin Kamara did not practice on Wednesday. So as you can listen to this pod, we thankfully got an update during the show. He is not practicing. He's going to be genuinely questionable, I think. So be prepared to take it down to the wire with Kamara, and be prepared, folks, to get Mark Ingram in there. Top 18? Top 14?
He'd be a minimum top 18.
Top 8.
You just lop the one off there, top 8. Like
I don't know. Well, because that gets us to our next question. The Saints passing attack, can they sustain offense? Is there any way Trevor Siemian can actually attempt 51 passes again? And there has to be a bigger Taysom Hill role, does there not? Like, was that? There's no way that couldn't. That had to just be the fact that he had been out with a concussion for a month. And like, I don't know if any of us. Denny's a Taysom Hill sicko. Like, Denny like actually likes Taysom Hill. I don't know if any of us are like actually Taysom Hill fans, but I'm not a fan of Trevor Siemian attempting 50 passes. I'll tell you that. And this role has to get bigger, does it not?
Yeah, when Jameis Winston and Drew Brees were the quarterbacks, like, I don't know, do we really need to see that much Taysom Hill? Trevor Siemian, like, oh, my, I got to go buy my Taysom Hill jersey. Yeah. I actually am not sure we see that much more of him, though, because Peyton talked about this last year, is that when Taysom Hill is the direct backup, that presents a much higher risk that if he gets hurt on a play where he's just doing weird, dumb Taysom Hill stuff, that they lose their backup quarterback. And given the quarterback injuries, this could, like, they could be instantly onto an emergency. I don't know who their emergency guy would be, but they could be.
It's Trevor Siemian. They're already on their emergency guy. What
yes, thank
lose?
You.
But I think the thing is, Peyton will not. I don't think it's that likely that he risked. Like, he talked about it last year. He said this last year that once they started moving to their backups, they did not want to risk Taysom Hill on as much of the weird Taysom Hill stuff. And like, that logically makes sense. Like, I think Taysom Hill should maybe be the starter. So that's probably not a player you want to risk getting hurt. Although the fact that he's not the starter maybe at least tells us their valuation of him.
I mean, risk getting him hurt by making him the starter. There's one quarterback who ranks worse in both EPA per play and CPOE, completion percentage over expected, than Trevor Siemian, and it's Zach Wilson.
Oh no!
Get this guy off the field. Put Taysom Hill in there.
I agree. I would love to see Taysom Hill play like a fifth of the team snaps last week. I would love to see that 100 from under center. Well, but like strategically, if you go in with the assumption that Trevor Siemian is the better quarterback, the starter, it wouldn't make a lot of sense to have your backup quarterback running punt gunner routes.
What I don't understand is they would yank Drew Brees off the field like 12 times per game, and you can only yank Trevor Siemian twice? Like, how does that make any sense whatsoever? And I think it's honestly the concussion. I think it was the layoff, and then the role is going to get bigger.
Well, even so, you can't start Taysom Hill unless he's named the starter. Like, even in Superflex leagues, that's the issue, because there's still too much concern that his role would not grow after Siemian played 96% of the snaps. And yes, Hill was sprinkled in on the final game-winning drive, or the attempt to game-win drive. Also, we think that they would want to play Hill more, since although none of us can name a Titans cornerback, like, their team has recorded the second most sacks and 7 picks during their 5-game winning streak because they get coverage with their front 7. I already mentioned Harold Landry. Bud Dupree, as he's gotten healthier, has been a better player as well. So their front 7 is very impactful, and you actually need a mobile quarterback out there in this game. So that's the only issue. But unless he's truly named starter on the NBC Sports Edge news page, you can't play him in fantasy.
Daigle, his name is Jack Rabbit Jenkins. There is a Titans corner that we know, and it's
Mr. Sure he hasn't Jack been cut yet.
He has not been cut. It's Mr. Jack Rabbit, folks, and we'll be right back.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Get an edge in your fantasy league with player rankings, projections, tiers, and alerts for players on your team or who you are eyeing up on the waiver wire by signing up for NBC Sports Edge Plus. And do it at a discount. Use the promo code GOOD10 and get 10% off your annual subscription. That is GOOD10 for 10% off NBC Sports Edge Plus. The Bucks come off their bye getting 9.5 points on the road against the football team who just got dominated by the Broncos, except that didn't actually happen. That was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, wasn't it? Are the football team's coming off bye too, are they not?
That they are.
Points bet shows a 51.5 over under for a contest where the Bucks will be missing Antonio Brown again, probably missing Rob Gronkowski again. Daigle, with that narrower target tree, who are we prioritizing this week? Chris Godwin or Mike Evans?
Well, we don't know if Chris Godwin's going to play either. He's battling a foot injury. He did not practice on Wednesday, and Bruce Arians said he's not sure of his role as status for Sunday just yet. So it may be Mike Evans and Tyler Johnson who we're talking about here. But honestly, with such a whittled down target tree, it still stays concerted even if Godwin is rolled out, because it's then Evans, Tyler Johnson, and Leonard Fournette. And that's it, honestly.
You left out a really key name there. Breshad Perriman is back to his old stomping grounds, where he was like a wide receiver 4 the last time he was on the Bucks.
He was like a wide receiver 2 in those games. He went off in a few games while admittedly all of their other guys were hurt. But like, that was what got him another contract in the NFL. Had he flamed out there, it probably would have been over.
So like, if Chris Godwin doesn't play, is Mike Evans like a top 5 wide receiver? Hopefully.
Yes. Yep.
Like, no, you just jam him in there. Crane has doubts. Crane, lay it on.
I guess I struggle to think that like he's got that level of upside just purely from like target share. Now, he gets used in the red zone. He gets used deep. So I don't want to say he doesn't have a ton of upside. He does. But like, I don't know that the target's condensing when Antonio Brown gets pulled out is awesome. But when Godwin gets pulled out, I don't know that like he's going to see a massive target share increase. Like, Brady spreads the ball around.
Sounds like maybe we got a Scotty Miller sicko on our hands. Is that true, Pat?
Scotty Miller's injured too.
Oh yeah, he's gosh. On IR, I think.
Oh he had his 20.
Tyler Darden.
So I have an up. Why Demo do I have an update on Scotty Miller? I have an update on Scotty Miller. His 21-day practice window was activated like a week or two ago. Oh, they don't know if he's going to play though. He said he hopes to play, and then said we'll see what the trainers say. That's a way of saying he's probably not going to play. So it would be probably Jalen Darden, I would think.
I'm going to ban the 21-day practice window. I'm just let's get rid of it.
I couldn't be more in agreement. I'm ready to go out and.
Well, let's talk about a super ridiculous loophole. Like, if they're practicing, they're practicing. You need to issue a practice status on them.
Yeah, but that's don't do practice reports. It's awful.
That's what we're dealing with on the other side of the ball here too. Is that Logan Thomas is practice? Well, he's participating, but they don't have to give his status since he's not active yet. He just has his window open. Thus, he's just kind of roaming around, and no reporter can tell us anything on it because that's in the CBA. And so we don't even know if Logan Thomas is going to be back this game either.
It's like a Mack truck-sized loophole. Like, if you're practicing, you need to have a status report. It's pretty straightforward, I would say.
My apologies to Cyril Grayson, that's who I was thinking of when I said Gunnar Olszewski, who I believe is a Patriot. So I don't know where I think
it's easy to lose track of, Like, how many different Spark stars do we have at the back end of this Bucks receiver core, man? Like, every year they sign, like, the analytics darling, I feel like. And then every year they catch, like, four total passes.
Yeah, like, they have a Rotovis sub. Someone on their team who has, like, the ear of some random scout has a Rotovis sub, because it's always the Jalen Dart and Justin Watson, Scotty Miller types, where they're small school, big producers that make their way onto the back of the roster. And, like, I'm always interested in playing those guys when they get roles. Like, I will be firing up Tyler Johnson, who I assume is, like, 3.1K on DraftKings this week.
The good news, Scott Miller, they'll have to announce it by Saturday. If he's activated, he a top 18 receiver, Scotty Miller, folks.
So. Well, it sounds like we're dealing with, like, Tyler Johnson chalk. Is that where we're headed? Mark Ingram and Tyler Johnson chalk week in DFS? It's pretty gross.
I mean, Tyler Johnson would be a good play. You will not convince me that at minimum price, as Tom Brady's
at 20% owned.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, a good play in how he projects, not in a, you know, theory kind of way, to be clear.
John Daigle totally stone-faced at the Tyler Johnson talk. So I'm just going to ask him, where in the world do we rank Antonio Gibson coming off this football team bye? He was, you know, supposedly gotten healthier before they went on bye, or he was removed from the injury report on the Friday, and then the subsequent Sunday had his smallest workload of the entire year. What do we do with this, John?
Split touches with 11 apiece between J.D. McKissic himself and Jarrett Patterson. Corain and I talked about this on the Monday Waiver Wire show, as Patterson is a good stash for deeper leagues. But I genuinely do wonder if they just said, hey, we got to get the hell out of here. Like, we are banged up. It was a lifeless. I had to cover the game for us. Performance against the Broncos before they went to bye. They didn't have Dyami Brown. They didn't have Cam Sims. They were running DeAndre Carter for like the second most routes. They just needed to get healthy immediately. And so I do wonder if that was just what happened and Gibson returns to his full role. Having said that, we also know there's a reason why teams are throwing on the Bucks with the second most pass attempts per game. And it's because you can't run against them. Only Khalil Herbert has had success against them, and Khalil Herbert got benched this past week. So I just think that it is still makes up for a very good game for J.D. McKissic as a low-end RB2 in PPR leagues. And Gibson, Crane, I mean, you got to help me out here because I don't know. I really have no answer.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. It's a McKissic game. If he was coming back against the Chargers or something and we could go, all right, run funnel, like you're going to have to ride him, then that'd be, you know, you'd say, oh, yeah, no question, kind of probably like, you know, running back 15 or something like that. But like, I mean, he's probably like a round, like he's like a mid running back 3.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
Gibby. You get him in the top 36, but like barely. He's just in that zone of guys. He's in like the Jamal Williams zone. We're like, I mean, I guess this guy's going to get the ball, but is he actually going to do anything with it? Like, I have no idea. And you know, that's a pretty catastrophic outcome for a guy who was was he a late first round pick in some leagues?
I was in the draft.
So yeah, I've got him as the RB33 right now, sandwiched between Tony Pollard and Ty Johnson, two guys who might actually catch some passes. And I just, Antonio Gibson, it's that wait and see, which I mean, Kyle, of course, means he's going to make you $1 million in DFS since he's a wait and see player. Antonio Gibson, but I just don't know how you can.
No, don't. This is a true wait and see, Kyle.
No. We have seen it. The thing is, it's not a wait and see. We have seen it. We have seen that there, like, he hasn't seen more than 3 targets since week 1 in a game. And, like, the upside is that he out-touches Jarrett Patterson. The upside is no longer that week 2. Well, what if they start using him more as a passing, you know, passing downs player? There's no upside. It's done. We've lost the battle. Play for 2022.
Real quick, do we see Logan Thomas, if he indeed comes back, just taking his every down roll back from Ricky Seals-Jones? Or is this going to be a team maybe actually starts using 2 tight ends? Is it going to be a 1-for-1 replacement with Logan Thomas coming back for RSJ?
He did play every snap in his first 3 games. Having said that, he got there in fantasy for 2 touchdowns, because even his production just with 119 yards across 3 games wasn't that great. We need to see the statuses of their other wide receivers too, because that will probably dictate who is available, and then if they need to play more 12 personnel with 2 tight ends using Ricky Seals-Jones. I think it is still Logan Thomas, if he's available, is still the tight end 1 you're using here. But if out, we also know Ricky Seals-Jones will continue playing every snap and we will continue leaning on him. I would imagine Seals-Jones just kind of goes away, honestly, if Thomas is healthy. But again, that's what we were waiting on because we don't know.
In a world where Khalil Herbert just went away, I think that Seals-Jones will probably go away.
Unfortunately.
Ricky, yeah. We loved you. We're going to miss you. And
I wish you'd stick around. I wish you'd played over Logan Thomas, but I don't think it'll happen.
Just thank you so much for what you've done in my 14 team leagues, you know, with three flex spots where all my good players were hurt. We really appreciate it, Ricky.
With Ryan Fitzpatrick getting an MRI and still being an unknown timetable away from returning, we also love Terry McLaurin. Good to see you, buddy. Had a good year. We'll talk to you later.
Welcome back, Scary. The Eagles and Broncos continued their seesaw seasons in Week 9 with the Eagles succumbing to the Chargers and the Broncos dominating the Cowboys. Vegas doesn't seem to really know what to do with this one with points bet, clocking the Broncos as 2.5-point favorites against the Eagles. Kyle, we'll start with the Eagles, where Jalen Hurts followed up as QB25 Week 8 with the QB14 Week 9. The first two times all year he finished outside the top 12. Is Jalen Hurts finally beginning to fall back with Nick Sirianni? It's like all in on the run after previously being all in on the pass.
Yeah, it's been a really weird shift that, I don't want to say Sirianni was just like listening to Eagles talk radio or whatever, but there was just calls and calls for them to stop putting so much on Jalen Hurts' plate and also to ramp up Miles Sanders. That part, unfortunately, isn't able to happen because he's injured, but they did go ahead and completely switch to a run-heavy team. Some of that buoyed by like one weird game versus the Lions where they absolutely obliterated the Lions, but then there were other games where even in losses, they were much more balanced. So I do think they're kind of, like, it's a small sample to work with, but I think we have to anticipate that they are not that Jalen Hurts Superman type of team that they were early in the year. And if that's the case, yeah, he probably is still a little less exciting, but we weren't playing him because we were, you know, like, let's get 50 pass attempts for Jalen Hurts. It's because we can get 8 rush attempts for 60 yards and a touchdown. And I still think that probably stands, even if you're still losing some scramble potential from fewer dropbacks. He does probably lose some of that top 5 allure in any given week, though, and especially in a game with a low total, slight underdog, so a low implied team total, he does more fall into that QB 10, 11, 12 range, whereas it was arguable when he was playing in an exciting game or versus a bad defense. He was a top 5 fantasy option. I think he's just edged outside of that now.
It's wild that the Eagles at this point are now a run-heavy team on the season and pass rate over expected. If you told us that like 3-4 weeks ago, I mean, it seemed impossible. They were so pass heavy and they've gone completely the other way. I do think it has a big impact on Jalen Hurts. I mean, they had a pass rate over expected last week of minus 19%, which is the lowest of the entire season. So they're not slowing down here. Now, you know, they were against the Chargers, run funnel, you would expect that. But I don't think that they're philosophically, they've had a shift. And, you know, I don't know if it came from listening to talk radio either, but I'm not sure like what would be different if it had come from talk radio. You know,
Sirianni, Denny and I got done. Maybe just can't walk and chew gum at the same time, where it's like you can only pass, or we can only focus on the pass. No one even mentioned the run to me. And I was like, never mind, it's only the run. If anyone mentions the pass, you're fired, you're off the team. Kenneth Gainwell, you're fired, you're off the team.
Sirianni, truly, who has had something thrown at him from the stands in 2 of their last 3 games now.
That's the stat of the week right there. You've stolen that brain.
That's what you come to the Good Football Show for, is that stat right there. Also, Kyle mentioned, you know, the small sample, but it's actually a pretty large sample since they do lead the league and run play rate from 1-score games for the past month now. And so I believe since they have been competitive doing that in trouncing the Lions and then taking it all the way to the final drive against the Chargers, that's what they want to do in this game against the Broncos. The Cowboys did not have success with it, but teams prior to that did have success against the Broncos. So I would imagine it is still a Jordan Howard and to a lesser extent Boston Scott game, since we just saw Howard have the most carries of any Eagles running back, Miles Sanders included, in a single game all year.
He's got 29 carries over his past 2 games. He's back in a big way, which, you know, it's hard to think of a more 2021 development.
And one of those, you know, finicky rules that we don't know why the NFL does it, but you can't move a guy to your practice squad on and off for 3 consecutive weeks without signing them to their roster officially with a contract. And they actually did just give Jordan Howard a contract. So I would think he sticks around over Boston Scott if Miles Sanders is back next week as well.
I just had the ultimate sicko thought, by the way. I wish I were kidding about this, but in my head, I was thinking like, man, I just wish Jordan Howard was on the Titans. Like he'd just gobble up those carries for the Titans. He'd be like a top 18 running back. He's better than Adrian Peterson. I wish we could get Jordan Howard on the Titans. Then I think I should turn in my gun and badge.
I feel a little nauseous. I'm not going to lie.
Crane, real quick, before we move on to the Broncos, this Eagles pass. So we talk about the Hurts transformation, the running game transformation. You know, Devontae Smith finally had a big game last week. Dallas Goedert had his quietest game of three since the Eagles traded Zach Ertz. Just where are we at with this Eagles passing attack, and where are we at with Dallas Goedert?
Yeah, Dallas Goedert, I was looking at average depth of target for tight ends because it's kind of remarkable just how, if you just look at guys who play a full complement of routes and are targeted deep, so 80% plus route rate and an 8 out of 8. There's three tight ends in the league: Kyle Pitts, Travis Kelce, Darren Waller. That's it. Just targeted deep and run a bunch of routes. That's really the path to upside. Dallas Goedert has a 9.3 ADOT. He's run 83% of routes or more since week 7 over the last 3 weeks. So he has that profile. He just, you know, early on in the season was splitting it, and now he's a full-time tight end. By the way, Mike Gesicki, over the last 3 weeks, same deal. He gets targeted very deep, and he's been running more routes as well. It's kind of the de facto wide receiver too with Parker out. So when you find a guy who's getting targeted deep like this and is running a full slate of routes, I think you just go to it. I mean, this really is the profile that we're looking for, and it's a pretty rare profile. You need him to get targeted at a high rate. It's tight end. It's going to bounce around a bit. It's, you know, a low volume passing attack. It's Jalen Hurts, all of that. But I think Goedert still has a very strong tight end profile.
Well, go a step beyond that too, because it's not only he's on the field and getting deep targets, he's getting a volume of deep targets as well, because he does have a 31% target share in his last three games without Zach Ertz. And we saw this past week with few passing attempts, with Jalen Hurts only throwing 7 passes this past game, 70% literally condensed to Devonta Smith and Dallas Goedert. They just don't go anywhere else. And so it's such a honed-in target tree whenever Hurts is asked to throw that Goddard's just literally running all the routes and getting all the targets from a onesie position, which is amazing.
Daigle, on the other side of the ball, Teddy Bridgewater kind of bottomed out during the Broncos' 4-game winning streak. He's stabilized a bit during this 2-game winning streak, averaging over 8 yards per attempt again, but still not much ceiling, under 250 yards both games, only 2 passing touchdowns. He did get a rushing touchdown against the Cowboys, but we kind of talked about earlier, I mean, what's the deal with Teddy this week? Is he on the streaming radar?
I think he's definitely a strong streamer. I would still start, as we talked about earlier, Matt Ryan over him. But the QB 16-17 fits in nicely because we've seen that Philadelphia has just been paper cut over the last month. They are registering the league's 5th lowest pressure rate since week 4 against Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, Derek Carr, Justin Herbert, for example, because all 4 of those quarterbacks I just named completed over 80% of their passes against the Eagles, because all they did was drop back and get rid of the ball quickly because they know Jonathan Gannon is just running vanilla one cover shell screens and allowing them to throw underneath. And that actually fits Bridgewater's tendencies, since 60% of his passes this year have come within 9 yards of the line of scrimmage. So I think it's a heavy dump off game we're about to see for Jerry Jeudy in particular to excel.
See, who can we trust? I mean, is Jerry Jeudy the guy to trust? I mean, Cortland Sutton, his numbers have just like collapsed the past 2 weeks. Tim Patrick led this receiver core in yards last Sunday. Who are we trusting out of these three? Is it to the point where like we just bet on Jerry Jeudy targets and maybe consider Cortland Sutton too volatile to be a wide receiver too?
Cortland Sutton's worst games in terms of target totals have all come with Jerry Jeudy in the lineup. And it was more concerning that Tim Patrick, like you said, out-targeted him last week. I do think he probably is falling back into that wide receiver 3 volatile, still probably a lot of, or at least more than average deep shots. But with Jerry Jeudy coming back and immediately siphoning off a pretty strong amount of targets, it does feel like Sutton volatile, maybe some upside, although, you know, the offense isn't one we're necessarily targeting for upside. And Jerry Jeudy is probably the best floor. And really, given how talented he is, it easily can be argued that he's also just the best ceiling.
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. Isn't Albert O banged up now? So we've got, you know.
Yes.
Albert O's always banged up. I hate to say it as a Mizzou alum. He's so talented, but he is banged up a lot.
No fan should be able to come back this week, though.
Tim Patrick also banged up right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the targets could condense a little bit. And also, Jerry Jeudy has played 76% of his snaps in the slot. He's got a 2.5 yards per route run. I'm excited about Jerry Jeudy. You know, the matchup, as Daigle laid it out, like we're looking for short targets. We're looking for underneath targets. Maybe there's some additional targets available there with the tight ends banged up. Jerry Judy's been awesome so far on his routes. I think it could be a little bit of a low-volume passing attack, you know, but I still like Jerry Jeudy here.
I just had terrors in my head of Darius Slay just getting glued to Jerry Jeudy and just nothing happening and just weeping. So that's how I spend most of my Sundays, just weeping anyway. That could be part of it. Real quick on this game, Javonte Williams, he may be starting to make a move. I mean, Melvin Gordon touched the ball like 24 times. But it was only 17 carries for Javonte Williams. He didn't catch a pass, but he had runs of 11, 20, 7, 17, 37, and 10 yards. Like, he was ripping chunk gains against the Cowboys defense that hadn't been allowing a lot of running back fantasy points. And I was just wondering if anyone maybe saw some actual daylight there for Javonte Williams, or just know this is a really run-heavy offense. Melvin Gordon's workload was very robust still in week 9. Where do we find ourselves with this Broncos backfield?
Karain, you look excited, but the fact that he once again got out-carried 21-17 and out-targeted 3-0 still has me to the point where, unless they're boat racing their opponents, that rushing volume, even if they are a run-heavy team, projects to come down. It is so blatantly clear that Javonte is more explosive, just overall offers you on a per-carry basis vastly more than Melvin Gordon ever will. The team does not care, though. They have shown us time and time again that they will split their carries. Albeit, I think you can still probably slot Javonte in as, like, despite seeing maybe less volume, arguably ahead of Melvin Gordon, simply for the fact that, like, we've seen that it is very possible in any given game, if they come within 2 or 3 carries of each other, Javonte probably should out-yardage him.
Yeah, simply for the fact that he looks like one of the best young running backs in the entire league. I mean, he's running back 6th in success rate. He's second in breakaway percentage. He's second in elusive rating. And he's been at the top of these metrics for weeks and weeks and weeks. Like, he's just been consistently crushing. Yeah, they're not giving him the workload yet, but it's getting to the point where the dude is, like, banging on the door to get the full workload. It kind of reminds me a little bit of DeAndre Swift last year, where, you know, it's like they're just refusing to continue to play Adrian Peterson. They continue to play Adrian Peterson. But it gets to the point where we've seen the talent really come through. One of these weeks, they're actually going to give him the workload. He's going to be a 1A back, you know, maybe even a clear lead back at some point. And he's going to be a smash because of how talented he is. And they want to be a run-heavy team. And this spot, the Eagles have been a run funnel. Teams have shifted 3% to the run against them. So, and also the Eagles are, like, because they're going run heavy, I could see this being kind of a low scoring game where the Broncos are able to keep things on the ground pretty easily. So in all likelihood, this will not be the week that Javonte Williams actually breaks out, but I'm starting to get to the point where I want to start to sprinkle him into, like, DFS and stuff. Like, I haven't been, this would be the first week that I do that, but I'm starting to get to the point where I actually do think it could be imminent to where he gets, like, a, you know, a 1A type of workload.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The NFL season is in full swing, and the NBC Sports Predictor app has you covered with Sunday Night 7. Predict what will happen between the Chiefs and Raiders on Sunday Night Football for a chance to win up to $100,000. It is free and easy to play. Download today from your app store or visit NBCSports.com/predictor. And starting after Thanksgiving, 1 million will be up for grabs every Sunday night. NFL Sunday Night 7 on NBCSports.com/predictor. We end with the Steelers hosting the Lions as 8.5-point favorites, according to PointsBet. You know, Steelers coming off the Tony Corrente Bowl the Lions coming off a much needed bye where they looked like, I mean, easily the worst team in the NFL, losing 44-6 to the Eagles in week 8. And we've been a theme, the show has been gross streamers. Is Big Ben, Pat Crane, I'll throw this to you. The talk about a guy who's displayed zero ceiling, but can we stream Ben Roethlisberger against the Lions, or is it just Najee all day and all night in Pittsburgh this Sunday?
Well, I don't know if you guys saw the update today, but Roethlisberger revealed that he'd hurt his shoulder a while back. It's unclear exactly when, because he said it might have been against Cincinnati, who they played in, I believe, week 3. But then he said it might have been against Oakland, who they last played in 2018. So that would explain a lot. You know, we've really seen some fall off in his play.
Roethlisberger literally made a joke about his own health that I wanted to make on this show.
Yeah. I think the Lions, they're so bad on defense. They're truly terrible on defense. You can do whatever you want against them. The Steelers have been balanced, but they're starting to shift toward the run. We've seen them go pretty run heavy in a number of weeks. Last week they were balanced, but they were -4% in week 8. They were -12% in week 5. They haven't been really pass heavy since week 3. So I think that they're going to want to run this through Najee Harris. I think you could probably stream Roethlisberger, I guess, but it feels like kind of a low upside and maybe a little bit lower floor than you think, because they could just use Najee to salt away the game and throw short a bunch.
Yeah, Roethlisberger has no 20-point games, no games with 3 touchdowns, 1 game with 300 passing yards. I mean, he's come to a QB1 performance with QB14. Like, he just has no upside. As Crane said, the guys who have no upside coincidentally also just have low floors, because he has more games below QB24 than he has even above QB15, which isn't even QB1. So you can stream him in 3 quarterback leagues.
Yeah. The saving grace is that the Lions, like, as bad as we know they are, like, even the numbers don't do it justice. Like, they've allowed 7 passing touchdowns in their last 5 games in October, despite facing Justin Fields and Jalen Hurts in that time, who didn't throw a touchdown at all. They're just terrible. So that would be the one excuse you make here, like, in superflex leagues. But in 1 quarterback leagues, I cannot imagine getting to that point.
Anytime you have to stream the far lower upside version of Matt Ryan, you just have to do it with Big Ben Roethlisberger. You just have to do it. So, yeah, no, Ben is just, I mean, isn't that just, please, Ben, just like, I was, you know, it's not up for me to tell you what you do with your life, but, you know, Philip Rivers retired. You know, a lot of these guys are moving on, going on TV. I just, you know, I think you might enjoy it. I think you might enjoy it. But you know who wouldn't enjoy Ben Roethlisberger?
Better, I'll tell you that.
You know who wouldn't enjoy Ben Roethlisberger retiring, Daigle? Pat Freiermuth, because Ben is supplying him with a steady stream of touchdowns. Is Pat Freiermuth becoming a tight end one?
He really, really is. Has earned a 20% target share in his last 2 games without Eric Ebron, earning a team high 4 red zone targets and matching Chase Claypool with 3 end zone targets in that span. Also running a route on 71% of Ben Roethlisberger's dropbacks in those 2 games. And now we see that Claypool received an MRI on his toe. We don't know his status just yet, but that continues to open up doors for Freiermuth. It's one thing to get opportunities like he stumbled into without Juju Smith-Schuster, without Eric Ebron, but to continue delivering with those opportunities is how you stick around. And so far, so good for Freiermuth as a low tight end one for the rest of the season, in my opinion.
The other side of the ball, I mean, we know there's not a Lions receiver we can trust. It's honestly not even really worth talking about the Lions receivers. In the backfield, do we have any DeAndre Swift concern about kind of back-to-back, really 3 games in a row where he's done nothing on the ground? 13 for 24, 13 for 48, 12 for 27. He has caught 5 passes all 3 of those games, and it didn't come out to fantasy numbers in that 44-6 game, but he's catching too many passes, right, for that 44-6 to really create any DeAndre Swift concern.
Yeah, if anything, the 44-6 games are almost the reason you want to play him. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch, because we saw like Jamar Jefferson get in there, but the 30-14 games where they're losing by a lot to where they have to pass, but where Dan Campbell sure as hell is not giving up the ghost, and he's not giving up on these games at the point where they are losing by 38 short. That's not good. That's also not probably, they're terrible, but that is even for them an outlier event. these are the types of game scripts you want to be playing in, because he is so amply used as a pass catcher. And we know that targets and receptions are just so much more valuable than rush attempts, especially with, you know, how poor the Lions are on offense. Those rush attempts are really unlikely to really spring him. It's the targets we want, and he'll keep getting them.
And also, like, Swift ranks pretty poorly in a number of rushing advanced metrics.
He's been good as a runner, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's been really good as a receiver. So it's like, it's the thing he's bad at, you know, if we get him used more in early downs. I mean, I got sucked in when Jamal Williams got ruled out into the excitement of DeAndre Swift week. And obviously it failed spectacularly against the Eagles. But it's in a weird way, like that's the opposite of what we want. I think we want him just like exclusively used on passing downs as much as humanly possible, like in truly kind of an Alvin Kamara type of role, because that's where he's best. That's, to Kyle's point, more valuable anyway. And he might actually be pretty bad as an early down running back. Oh,
no. Jamal Williams also not practicing on Wednesday out of the bye. That's pretty concerning. And we do know in that week 8 game that DeAndre Swift still out-touched Jamar Jefferson and Godwin. Let's just stick with that. 17-5 until the Eagles took a 38-0 fourth quarter lead. So it took literally 5 scores for Swift to get taken off the field in garbage time. He'll be just fine.
We'll close with TJ Hockenson. He had the 2 really big games to begin the year. Then he struggled for like basically the better part of a month. Now he's really been cooking again. Target totals of 11, 9, and 11 in the 3 games going into the Lions bye. Caught at least 6 passes all 3 of those games. He got into the point where, you know, he's weekly top 5 tight end. We don't have to worry about him even in this offense that's at like a weekly shutdown risk. Or are there still red flags that are maybe getting ignored with TJ Hockenson?
Well, I was just going to say, like, we want to talk about Pat Freiermuth. He basically now has the same profile as TJ Hockenson. He had a 76% route rate last week. TJ Hockenson's at 85%, so that's a little better. He was targeted on 20%. He has a 20% target per route run this season. TJ Hockenson's at 21%, so slightly better. And then Freiermuth has an ADOT of 6.7. Hockenson's at 7.3. So, again, a little better. But, like, you don't want your supposedly locked in top 5 tight end to be like a little bit better than what we're now expecting from Pat Freiermuth. I don't think he's a top 5 tight end. Like, I'd rather have Goddard. I'd rather have Gesicki. So I think he's still a tight end 1 because, like, he's got a pulse. But, you know, I think he's down in the low end tight end 1 at this point.
He also recorded those 11 targets in week 8, season high, 32% target share in a game where he played a season low in snaps in a blowout. Also, recall that game was his first time off the injury report on a Friday, off the final injury report since week 4. So I would imagine he comes back fully healthy, as is Swift, who's not under the injury report at all on a Wednesday for the first time since week 1 for this game. And the fantasy plays are just so concentrated for the Lions among the 2 guys we talked about. DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson.
Well, in the show, can you guys name a Lions wide receiver? Go.
Khalif Raymond.
Amon-Ra St. Brown.
No, those are fake. Those are fake.
Geronimo Allison.
Unfortunately, all 3 of those are correct, very much including Geronimo Allison.
We all lost. We all got it right and lost.
Yeah, that's they cut Tom Kennedy, though, I believe.
I'm going to go update the rankings. I'll be back.
Yeah, pour one out for Tom Kennedy. Not good enough for the Lions receiver corps. That's a pretty bad beat in the year 2021.
Is Tyrell Williams still on the team?
He's not. He's been cut as well, which seemed very surprising and unnecessary to me. I feel like he would do some good clearing out some space down the field for Jared Goff. But I guess that doesn't matter when Jared Goff's your quarterback, because he doesn't throw down the field unless he has his hand held on play action. You know, he gets sprung out in like acres of space where he can set and throw. But that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us on our first of our two week 10 previews. We'll be back on Thursday with Mr. Matt Straub, Mr. Denny Carter. We'll preview the rest of the slate. Check out DFS Building Blocks on Friday with John and Kyle. Check out Mr. Crane's walkthrough on Friday. Check out my rankings on Thursday. And just try to stay alive out there this fantasy season. We're getting into the playoff zone. And just best of luck. Stick with
us. We've crossed the halfway point, right?
We have. Oh, we are halfway to the halfway point of this 40-week NFL season. So
just remember, we're all in this together. We're all going through it. The pain you are feeling is the same pain I'm feeling. So we're going to get there. It's okay.
Well, that's not true. If we play in the same league, we're not in this together. I hope you don't make it through. All right.
Wow.
On that note, we will catch you later.
With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10.
help your soil retain moisture longer. With color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.